Welcome to Three and Out, your national NFL podcast featuring three sports media pros. Me, Ty Shelter from 538, joined by Samantha Bunton of NBC Sports and Michael Shoddy of PickWatch.com. It's time for this week's key takeaways, where we break down everything from this weekend's NFL action. You guys, we had so much NFL action. It was beautiful. It was beautiful. It was beautiful. It was just the greatest game after the greatest day, after the greatest weekend of NFL football, maybe of our entire lives, but ended on a bit of a sour note. And I want to get to that for my key takeaway. But before we do, make sure you take a second, make sure you're subscribed, whether that's on Apple Podcasts, whether that's on Spotify, Stitcher, SoundCloud, Podchaser, Castro, Overcast, anything with cast in it. We are on it and we are loud and proud. Three times a week, including our Monday night live show, which we'll do on halftime, just like we always do. If you're hearing this, it'll be right in our feed. Make sure you're subscribed and following us on the Halftime app. Go to your app store, download Halftime, or go to thehalftime.app in your browser. Get that on your phone and join us. You can talk with us, chat with us, and text whatever. We do a live hour. It's always a good time. Guys, our key takeaways, we have to get to them. We have to talk about them. And after all of that incredible football, a lot of my Twitter feed was only griping about the NFL overtime rules as the Chiefs and Bills played the most bananas, wide open, unbelievable game. And then we ended up with the Chiefs getting the ball and driving to score. And the Bills did not get last licks. They did not get an equal opportunity to respond. They just plain lost. And a lot of people in my feed are absolutely grumped about it. Many pointing out that the Chiefs lobbied for an equal number of possessions overtime a couple years ago and got denied because they got on the wrong end of this. I want to hear your guys' thoughts because I have thoughts. I think the overtime rules are an imperfect solution that is only been made imperfect every time they change it to end this griping. But Samantha, what do you think about the overtime rules?
Well, I mean, from a personal standpoint, I hated this. I hated how this ended, partly because I wanted to win, sure, but also because I just, the idea of somebody not touching the ball in overtime and the other person getting the opportunity to end it. So I don't like sudden death in any capacity. I just think that it is, takes the air out of the tires of something that was amazing and competitive. And the whole, I guess, appeal of this game, of the way it ended, was that it was just back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. And I hate that the second the clock expired, we move into a situation where one team just doesn't have an opportunity to answer. I hate that. That being said, I don't think we blame the overtime rules for why the Bills lost here. We had lots of opportunities to stay in this game, to get ahead in this game, and you didn't do it. So it's kind of like blaming the refs. Don't put yourself in a position where you will be subject to something that might put you out of the postseason. But I do think they need to be changed. I don't know, like you said, you know, every time we change these, there's a new problem. And if we change it and say everybody has to touch the ball, there will be a problem again. So that's kind of my issue with it is like, yes, in an ideal world, I would like to see this change, but I'm not sure exactly what we change it to. I mean, the Chiefs thing is kind of irksome. I hate to see a team that whined and cried about this when they were on the wrong end of it, then turn around and benefit from it. But in a way, that's an argument for keeping it in place as is, because, hey, like it got them last time, but this time they got somebody else with it. So maybe in a way that's fair. Like I said, I'd love to find a better solution, but you know, new solutions breed new problems. And I think that's exactly what would happen here.
The only thing that's keeping the NFL from going to a college style score until the other team can't score, can't match your score, is timing. And it's not timing on games like this. It's timing on the 1 p.m. games on a Sunday afternoon when it's Browns versus Lions and they fought each other to a 3-3 victory at the end of regulation and they can't shoot straight. And then all of a sudden we get to a 3-hour overtime because both gangs still can't shoot straight. Like, that's what the NFL is really worried about. They're not worried about two great teams in the playoffs going back and forth like this. They're worried about two terrible teams that just can't get out of their own way and it takes forever. And then you have half the country watching this terrible excuse for football rather than one of the, you know, America's game of the week in the 4:15 or the 4:30 slot. So that's why the NFL doesn't want to change it. It's more entertainment based than quote unquote fairness based. I have long been a proponent of things like kicking, things like defense are inherent to the game. Like,
yes,
both teams don't get to touch the ball in overtime, but both teams still have an equal opportunity to win, if that makes sense, because you have the number one defense in the NFL. You trotted out the best singular unit in the NFL, offensively or defensively. Their defense was far and away the best of the best. Like, if I had to pick one, I'd pick the Bills defense. They got to trot them out. They didn't get it. Like, that's fine. Like, that's life. Get a stop. Hold him to a field goal. Then you get a chance to go score a field goal. I think there is fairness in the ways that are inherent to the game of football. There isn't fairness in we all like to watch quarterbacks and we all like to watch offenses. But the Pick Watch official account got me this morning because it said you're asking one team to do something. You're not asking the other to do it. It's actually the flip side. You're not asking the Chiefs to play defense. And I get that. And I can see that. And if you sort of made it like it is currently with the field goal, but just say each team is going to have at least one chance to win. And so if the Chiefs get a stop, then that's game over. If the Chiefs don't get a stop and it's tied, you know, 7-7 in overtime, then it's sudden death. The next team who scores wins. Like, I can see that. I do want to try to avoid the 3-hour long gangs that can't shoot straight type of games. But all in all, I think this game was fair. You had tons of opportunities in regulation to make that game go away.
Yep.
You can't base the quote unquote fairness of an entire game about 2 minutes in overtime.
That's exactly where I come down. Here's my thing. There's a fundamental misunderstanding, I think, among most fans, most media, and I think some coaches about what the purpose of overtime is. NFL football is not a game that can just continue to be played like basketball, like hockey, like baseball. You can't keep asking linemen to slam into each other 70, 80, 90, 100 snaps a game. You can't keep asking DBs to cover wide receivers down the field, you know, 70, 80, 90, 100 snaps. Like, we were already seeing it in the end of regulation where these teams were gassed, right? And when you have guys playing gassed, you are increasing the chances of injury. You are removing it further from where it was. You know, this was not Josh Allen and Patrick Mahomes combined for 300 yards passing over the last 2 minutes of the game plus overtime. Like, this, we were already into the territory of this was not the same game that was played for the first three quarters or first three and a half quarters, right? Because these defenses could not cover or could not stop these teams anymore. And you are not, like, the point of overtime in the NFL is not to equitably distribute chances to win. The point is to break the tie and end the game because they got to get these guys off the field. And that's why it was true sudden death for most of our lives. But we got grumpy about watching Brett Favre, like, stand there and lose as his team surrendered a field goal. And again, never mind the fact that he threw the filthy pick that made it an overtime game in the first place. And here we are, we're sitting here watching the Bills try from 9 minutes out to end the game by denying Patrick Mahomes the ball, by denying a possession for him, by denying him a chance to win. They tried to grind that game all the way down to 4-0s with possessing the ball and denying the Chiefs a possession. No one had a problem with this. If they'd managed to pull it off, it would have been an unbelievable power move. Instead, they left Mahomes too much time. And then Mahomes left Allen too much time. And then with 13 seconds to go, somehow the Bills still had left Mahomes too much time and went down and get a field goal. You stop him from getting a field goal in 13 seconds and you win that game. Bills had this game won dead to rights twice and blew it twice. There is nothing about football that goes, oh, well, then in that case, we should start distributing chances to win equally. That's not how this game works at any point in the previous four quarters. Why does it suddenly have to be the point in overtime? It doesn't make any sense to me. It's not football. And I don't think that if the overtime rules need changing, okay, fine, get rid of the coin toss. You can do the spot and choose. You know, somebody asked, okay, yes. if we're doing spot and choose right now, where would you go? And I'm like, give me the 17-yard line. Right. Okay. Because we know that getting that ball first is going to be a huge difference. But how, you know, how far back can you put it? I don't want to put myself on the 9-yard line. I don't want to put myself on the 1-yard line, but both offenses pretty much would take the ball under any circumstance against this defense. Right. That'd be fascinating. I'd love to see that. There's also, I can't remember which it was. I think it's the 27-yard line where a nominal win probability comes out to 50-50. If you start it there, regardless of who starts with the ball, and you go, okay, eliminate the coin toss, eliminate the randomness. I get that. But if you're going, okay, well, give each team a possession. Okay. And then if it's tied, then what? Well, just give each team another. No, you can't do that. You can't play another half an hour of football. It's not possible. It's not fair. It's not safe. It's not going to result in what you think it's going to result in. So for me, the overtime rules, if we want to change who gets the ball or that initial setup, fine, change that. Get rid of the coin toss. I don't care. But this isn't, you can't turn this into the college, like, everybody starts in the red zone free for all and then pretend all those touchdowns count as regular touchdowns. And we have games ending in the 60s and 50s and just completely blowing up the stats. I don't think you can change the game like that. I don't want it to change. And I don't think the overtime rules in terms of possessions and sudden death and stuff need to change. Win it in regulation.
One of the things that people are forgetting during this debate is that actually the team that wins the coin toss usually wins the game. Like that's a stat most of us know. But when you break it down between teams that take the ball and teams that defer, the team that defers actually has a higher win percentage than the teams that take the ball. Yeah. So there's no cut or dry solution here. Yeah, Mahomes is playing out of his mind. And yeah, him having the ball in overtime is going to be an absolute, winner for you as a team. But those defenses until the last like 10 minutes of the game had also been playing pretty good football all season long. There are plenty of reasons to think that if Buffalo had won that coin toss, they might've deferred. That there's tons of reasons to think that that's potentially the case. And it is what it is, guys.
Yeah. One of my followers is like, okay, just make the coin toss determinant. Just okay, cool. We toss a coin, winner wins. We all go home. It's like, I would love to see that where NFL teams stop playing to get to overtime. And obviously neither of these teams was playing to get to overtime. But if we approach overtime as a, you don't want to go to overtime as opposed to, hey, a potential chance to win. I think that's much closer to what the true spirit of overtime is, which is to break the tie and end the game. All right, Samantha, we got to get to your key takeaway. And I think, you know, after weeks of just absolutely high octane napalm in the morning takes, boy, did we get some unbelievable Aaron Rodgers Schadenfreude this weekend. Samantha, the floor is yours.
Who's happy right now? Me and Dick Butkus. We're both very happy right now. We're having a good weekend.
Two people who I link together all of the time.
Got himself onto Twitter. Got himself verified just so he could terrorize Aaron Rodgers and a bunch of Packers fans for like 18 hours. Fantastic.
Amazing.
I mean, but you know who else kind of terrorized Aaron Rodgers? The 49ers.
Yeah, they did.
I called this. I believe some of you called this as well, which is actually not because I hated Aaron Rodgers. I just thought it was a bad matchup, but it was lovely to see him go out this way. And some of this to me is just about being frustrated by the whole, I'm sick of seeing people saying the Packers are going to the Super Bowl every year when they don't play a competitive schedule. They don't look nearly as good as other teams, but because they win a lot of games, everybody overrates them. But there's really nothing better than getting rid of a guy who can't shut up, who earlier in the week said, I'm being silenced. He literally said this to a four-letter network employee. So he was being silenced while talking to the like biggest, loudest megaphone that exists for a sports person. So if this means we don't have to listen to this guy for like a couple of weeks, that would be amazing. That would be fantastic. Like, I'm so tired of this, like all the smugness, all of the superiority, whether it's talking about some ridiculous off-field thing or terrorizing his own team in the off season, or just the way that they came into this game. And you could tell they were shocked. They expected to just bulldoze San Francisco, and San Francisco said, So I mean, you could watch it, and the fans too. And that's obviously different. We're not holding all Green Bay fans responsible for Aaron Rodgers. But I think there's a point where you have to look at somebody like this who behaves this way as though they are above the law, and also cut from a different cloth, in especially when they're part of a group of people that by definition is all cut from a different cloth than like your average human, and says, I'm still better. And kind of throws that at people pretty regularly. Then when it comes back, it's kind of great. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I was happy to see Aaron Rodgers lose. This was probably the game of the week that I rooted hardest against my own pick. Typically, I've just sort of, you know, my pick is my pick, and that's who I root to win because I want to be right. But this game was the one game where I just said, no, even though I picked the Packers to win this one, I thought they were going to win. They obviously had a very good chance to win. But I was rooting hard for the 49ers to pull this one out. And the game was mostly taken out of Jimmy G's hands. And the game, for the most part, I think, was put in Aaron Rodgers' hands, and he just kind of fell flat on his face. Like, there were moments where I just expected him to turn it on, and he didn't. He looked listless on the sidelines a little bit. Like, I've started to hate the Aaron Rodgers face, as much as we all made fun of like the Peyton Manning face and the Eli Manning face. Tom Brady got a little sulky on the sidelines yesterday too. My wife pointed that one out to me, but Aaron Rodgers, just when he looks like he hates life, it's annoying to me because he doesn't look like he's even having fun anymore. And his own Schadenfreude has become my Schadenfreude, where like, I'm just over him. There's so many different things to talk about, which we will in my segment, about like what you could do with him and some of these other aging quarterbacks. I just want Aaron Rodgers gone from my collective memory. I almost don't want him to retire, because then there will be that like victory lap, or there'll be that time spent where we all just sort of look at his career accomplishments, which are many and numerous and laudable, and we just forget that he's been a pretty terrible human being this whole time. He's always been known as being like way too overly competitive in all the wrong ways, just being a just piece of shit from day one. I don't understand. Yeah, you're gonna probably have to bleep that one for a tie. I don't understand what it is about playing quarterback for the Green Bay Packers that you just become a really, really terrible human being. But whoever's next, just better be a big piece of shit too.
You know, I'll say for me, the interesting part of this is how much of the blame can be laid at his feet. You know, statistically, it was not a bad game. You know, it's not like he threw a bunch of picks. It's not like he had a bunch of ugly turnovers. But this was, and especially, you know, if you follow some of the smarter Packers bloggers, this was kind of Aaron Rodgers at his worst in terms of his old foibles, you know, not being settled in the pocket and locking on to Davante Adams. I can't remember when the first receiver not named Davante Adams was even targeted, but I think it was in the third quarter. You know, not playing within the offense, not taking options that were there. One of the last big shots he took, you know, someone brought out the NFL Jesus, like, you know, positional dots on the field, and was like, you know, here's Aaron Rodgers, had a wide open guy 15 yards down the field, crossing into the middle of the defense, nobody home. And he threw like a 50-yard hero ball to a double covered, just blanketed Davante Adams. It's like, that is not good quarterbacking, you know? And ironically, by putting it more on himself and making it more about his feet and his arm, he became less effective as a quarterback and denied the Packers more opportunities to score points and move the ball and take control of the game. And, you know, yeah, the Packers offensive line, which had been doing fantastic all season long, they'd been making chicken salad out of chicken shit for all season long. They get David Bakhtiari back in the last week, and then somehow the offensive line plays way worse against an absolutely fired up 49ers front seven. You know, special teams, total collapse, just absolutely unacceptable. Missed easy field goal at the end of a half. Blocked punt that changed the game. Blocked punt that was, you know, we'll talk more about that. There's all these things that we can point at, but Aaron Rodgers had every opportunity to win this game. 10 points. The Packers scored 10 points. They lost 13-10 at home at Lambeau, and Rodgers is a big part of the reason why. And I said this last week, guys, on our big show, and I said it like 2 weeks before when we were doing our big show on season year-end awards. I know it's a regular season award. I know you can't wait to see the outcomes of the playoff, but I can't call Aaron Rodgers the most valuable player in the league when they could have won the NFC North going at 9-8. And lost their first playoff game without him. Same results as far as where the expectations for this team is set. You're supposed to win this division, and then, you know, you want to go deeper than this in the playoffs. You would have had the same result with Jordan Love. And so I can't give my MVP to Aaron Rodgers. And if I'm a Green Bay Packer fan, a Green Bay Packer player, Green Bay Packer coach or executive or staff member, I don't want Aaron Rodgers back. I want him gone.
Yeah, I agree. Like, partly because, like, fuck this guy. Like, I want this guy around. I don't want him in the NFL. Right, I don't want him in Green Bay. Right. Like, just go away. But also because, yeah, I mean, at what point, if this guy, and this is what I keep saying about him, is like, it's not like he... oh gosh, he every year he makes it to the Super Bowl, but the rest of his team just can't quite pull it off. Like, no, they're an early exit out of the playoffs every single year because they play in a crappy division and they're seated too high. And then somebody upsets them. So like, why are we anointing this guy as like the greatest thing ever? And is he a good quarterback? Of course. Is he the MVP? Unfortunately, probably yes, per the rules that we have, because I agree with you, Ty. I don't like how that works because of the postseason issue, but per the rules that we have to follow. Yeah, I guess that's true. But like, I don't like it. And you'll see, I think this is probably more relevant to the next segment, to what we're going to talk about with Shoddy, which is like, I guess I just don't want to win that badly. Like, and this is, I've run into this with the Browns and Baker Mayfield situation, is like, there is a point where I don't care enough about winning to be able to hold my nose and say, okay, this is my guy. I'm going to get behind this guy. Like, I feel bad for Packer fans because like, this is a choice you've been forced to make. Like, you're rooting on this terrible, awful human who's not nearly as good as he thinks he is, but is good enough to where there's not really a whole lot you can do about it, or you're abandoning your team. I mean, what are you supposed to do? It's not a situation where anybody can really argue, hey, he should be out of the league and in jail. Like, no, he's just a dick. So like, what are you supposed to do with that? You can't argue for your team to get rid of him because he should be in prison. He should just be on an island where nobody has to hear from him or deal with him or listen to all his crazy theories about chemtrails and vaccines and Joe Biden and whatever other shit he's spewing today. So like, I just, I mean, again, like, I'm sorry, Ty, for the profanity lace rant, but just like, fuck this guy, man. I'm so glad. Yeah.
All right, I think we're all on the same page in terms of fuck this guy. So let's play a little game. This is Shoddy's suggestion. How about fuck, marry, kill? We have three aging franchise quarterbacks who just lost in the divisional round as number one or number two seeds. And you have three franchises that are wondering, what are we going to do with this guy? So instead of the usual FMK, we're gonna do keep, trade, or retire with Aaron Rodgers, Tom Brady, and Ryan Tannehill. Shoddy, you know, normally we do this where you get, you know, the first shots, we do ours, and then you react. So why don't you get the ball rolling, and we will react with ours.
Yeah, I feel like we have used our allotted naughty words for this program. If we want to keep that clean rating from iTunes or not break Ty's mute button. But we called it Bang, Marry, Kill in my good Christian school where, you know, we still played the inappropriate game, but didn't use the F word.
Sure.
I think obviously we would all retire Tannehill, like given these choices, but I don't think you can do that. Like, I don't know. He's not going to retire. He's 33. He probably should, because he's an aging running quarterback who we don't think of as a running quarterback, but his legs are actually a big part of his game moving around the pocket. He's going to slow down when he stops being that like former wide receiver turned quarterback from an athletic perspective. He has to actually be a quarterback and you know, I don't think he's that dude. He had AJ Brown and Julio Jones this season and still managed to not throw for the touchdowns or the yardage we'd expect him to have thrown for. So while I'd want to retire him, I'm going to say, let's get rid of him. Let's trade him. There have to be teams out there that would take a look at him as a veteran. I'm thinking even a team like the Detroit Lions. Like if I'm choosing between Goff and Tannehill, like I might choose Tannehill. Like Goff finished the season really well, but there are going to be teams out there, whether it's, you know, rebuilding teams that are just looking for a steady veteran hand as he was when he came to the Tennessee Titans, or whether it's teams who just think they're a quarterback away and maybe he can be that steady hand to lead a defensive first team to the playoffs like he's been now with the Titans again. I know this about Ryan Tannehill. He's much better than what we all thought he was when he finished out with the Dolphins. I'm glad he sort of had this second coda to his career, but he's the one I would get rid of. I would obviously keep Tom Brady because while he probably should retire, he's probably the one who needs to retire more than anyone here on this list. He also is not going to. Athletically, he is right there. He's had the best season of his career. He looks like he's in the best shape of his career. When they do the little morphing Tom Brady face, like showing his face from his time at Michigan till now, he actually looks like younger and healthier and more youthful than he did 20 years ago, which is just absurd. The man is obviously some sort of cyborg. And that means I get to retire Aaron Rodgers. Like, again, I almost don't want him to retire because I don't want the victory lap. I don't want the parades. But at the end of the day, as much as we don't like him as a person, he's earned that from his time on the field. So I will just retire him. I will just say that, you know, Aaron Rodgers almost sounded like he was done from a football perspective last offseason when he was way more interested in hosting Jeopardy, when he was way more interested in just getting out of Green Bay from a city perspective. I think there are more rumors and rumblings that he'd like to stay now. But honestly, if I'm making my choices here, I'm keeping Brady, trading Tannehill, retiring Rodgers.
So wild how your priorities change when you find out you're too stupid to host Jeopardy. Also like to point out that I think it's hilarious how we all get very hung up on not using the F word when we're playing this game, when we're like literally like hypothetically murdering someone. Like, shouldn't we be more worried about that? Yes. That we're just very casually being like, you know what? Like I'd knock you off in a heartbeat, like, but no F bombs. Okay. Let me see if I can come up with something different because what Shadi has given you is what I believe to be the correct answer. So I can't top that, but let me try to run it a little bit differently just for fun. Okay. Guys, I have to kill Aaron Rodgers. I can't not do it. You know that I can't not do it. I'm like personally and contractually obligated to do so. I have to do it. And you know, I'm good with the literal murder in a sense. Don't come for me, people. Actually, I don't care if you do. Go ahead and come for me. We can get rid of him. I don't want to see him anymore. I'm not giving him a victory lap. We can just quietly put him out the pasture. Don't need it. Don't want it. Goodbye. Like he's going to have his little fuss thing when he goes into the Hall of Fame. You know, if he deigns to show up. At that point, who knows how crazy he'll be at that point or what he'll be into. But just for fun, let's flip the other two. And I'll say here that I'll try keeping Tannehill because he's younger and cheaper. So there might be kind of a way to get something out of that, especially if you're running a system where you don't need a perfect quarterback, where your offense is not completely reliant on hero quarterback play, but you need a guy who can kind of do essentially what Tannehill can do, what his skill set looks like, with the understanding that he's probably not going to be the guy who ever wins you a Super Bowl. You're hoping he'll be the guy who can get out of the way and allow you to win a Super Bowl, who can kind of carry you in between. And as Shadi pointed out, we're way meaner to Tannehill, I think, than we should be. I mean, we got them all this way without Derrick Henry. So this is recency bias. He threw three kind of ugly interceptions yesterday. So everybody's pretty fed up about that. Titans fans are fed up about that. I understand that reaction in the moment, but he's actually not that bad. So I think I'm going to hang on to him at least for now. We'll go ahead and trade Brady, which I realized would start a riot and probably burn down the city of Tampa Bay. So I'm sorry about that, everyone. But like, look, he's 45 years old. How much longer can this possibly go on? What are the chances that he can walk into a situation again, like he did the first time when he left the Patriots, where he would then, where it would come back and bite you because he would turn around with his new team and win a Super Bowl the following year? Probably not great. Also, if you're the Bucs, you were just put out in the divisional round, so you're, that's really not your move anyway. But I mean, think of what you could get for him in trade, because somebody would do it. Somebody who's like a quarterback away would totally do it. So why not? Like, let's just light it all on fire and trade Tom Brady.
I love it. I'm going to give myself permission. Here's the thing. Ryan Tannehill is older than Cam Newton. And none of us at this point have any problem saying Cam Newton is washed and done, right? I think Ryan Tannehill, as a starting NFL quarterback, you know, this is the situation where you get it to work with Ryan Tannehill, where you have this incredible downhill pass running game. You have a grip of downfield threats, great receivers that are huge mismatches, right? And you can use him with a little RPO. You can use him chucking it ball downfield. You know, you can use him out running around, and you don't have to lean on him to win. And in fact, if you do lean on him to win, you're going to lose. The Titans are 0-3 in the playoffs when Ryan Tannehill has to throw it more than 15 times, not 15 times. That is a preposterously low number of attempts to play a full ball game in the NFL these days in the year 2022. And I just don't think Tannehill is the guy. I know, you know, like you said, Samantha, I think Titans fans are done with him. I don't think he's going to be hard to replace. And I don't think he's a starting quarterback anywhere. I don't think you can trade anything for him. And, you know, I don't think you can get much for him. I think Ryan Tannehill is the guy you put out to pasture and try and move on from. And I don't think, because the other two, you know, these teams have been built around these other two quarterbacks, the Titans aren't built around Tannehill. If you can succeed with Derrick Henry, Deontay Foreman, and that offensive line they've really invested in, those wide receivers that they've really invested in, you know, Jonnu Smith, you can put a different quarterback in there and they're going to have success. You know, Shoddy, you were like, oh, like, you know, maybe the Detroit Lions would want Ryan Tannehill. Okay, well, the Detroit Lions have built around Jared Goff in basically the same way. Let's put a bunch of draft picks on the offensive line. Let's get a good stable of running backs. They're probably going to go out and be, of any team, the one that spends the most on wide receiver this offseason. So, like, it's the same formula. You could put Goff in Tennessee and get similar results. So I'm going to retire Ryan Tannehill. I am going to keep Tom Brady because I think he's in a great situation. I think he and Arians are on the same page. You know, he said about 16 different things when asked before the game, you know, well, I'd like to come back. I'd like to end on a Super Bowl. I don't know if that's this year. I'm going to have to see. I'd say inconclusive, yada, yada, yada. Left every door open. But I think for Tom Brady, he and Arians are on the same page. He's going to get Chris Godwin back. They've been committed to giving him weapons. And this was a bad day. You know, Tristan Wirfs got hurt. They were down. Rashad Perriman, who was like your emergency backup guy, was also hurt. And so then no Antonio Brown. I mean, you had to dig pretty far deep down the barrel of wide receivers after Mike Evans. You know, Gronk still looks like he's in great shape. He looks like he can still play like 3 years after he allegedly retired. I think everything's still there in Tampa Bay. And if there's any place where he's going to continue to be successful, it's right where he's at. And that means we are talking about trading Aaron Rodgers, which I think makes sense in terms of there's a trade market for him. There is a you know, there are teams that would love to have him. And if you're trading Aaron Rodgers and you're the Green Bay Packers, you know, where does that put you? We are already looking at, what is it, $44 million over the cap. Davante Adams is probably not sticking around. He's probably going to get a bunch of money to go elsewhere. I don't think the Green Bay Packers are worrying about competing with whoever gets Aaron Rodgers, because I think this is the rebuild, the on to the next generation, the what are we going to do with Jordan Love, the maybe we're drafting a quarterback this year, maybe we're drafting a quarterback next year. I don't know. But I think if you trade Aaron Rodgers, you're getting draft picks, you're getting ammo to rebuild, and you don't care that he's going to Denver or he's going to San Francisco or he's going wherever he's going. So that's my thing. Retire Tannehill, keep Brady, trade Rodgers.
So just to sort of recap with some thoughts that I've had as you guys were talking. One, if Aaron Rodgers ever disappears, this recording is definitely being used as evidence in Samantha's trial. And I, for one, am just looking forward to the spike in listenership during that. Like, I'm sorry, Samantha, you're definitely going to jail for that one, but
prepare to be called as character witnesses.
Yeah.
Like, she's never threatened to kill anyone else. I'm just saying.
No one else, just this one dude who's missing. And the other one is just, as we're talking about, you know, obviously Aaron Rodgers is the most tradable asset here. Brady's not going anywhere. You know, if he's done, he's done. But if you're talking about the one like extra spot for Ryan Tannehill, it's actually another team that built sort of the same exact way. How many first round draft picks would you need to throw in to swap Tannehill and Lamar Jackson? Because I think I can make the point that I think Ryan Tannehill would be a better quarterback for the Baltimore Ravens, and Lamar Jackson would probably actually be a better quarterback for the Tennessee Titans. Like, Lamar Jackson is exactly what you need to sort of open up that run game even more. And he would probably be worth another like 1,000 yards rushing and like another 500 to 700 yards for Derrick Henry, just adding him as an element to the backfield. So I'm just, as I was listening to that, I'm thinking about that. We can talk about that in the off season as part of our, like, you know, potential whatever content. But that's if I'm throwing one team out there that I think Ryan Tannehill would excel slightly more on than he currently is for the Titans, that's what I've got. So I do think Ty's answer is probably the right answer, because his was done without the absolute hatred of Aaron Rodgers that Samantha and I have. So I'm going to declare Ty the winner and we can move on.
All right. You know who is the winner? Us. When you guys leave us ratings and reviews, share on social media, make sure you guys are spreading the word. We've got our website, which is awesome. All of our episodes go up there with all the descriptions and everything, links to where you can play them. It's at 3outpod.com. That's the same thing as our Twitter handle, 3outpod. Same thing as our Instagram handle, 3outpod. Make sure you're following, rating, reviewing all of those places, and stick right here because we are going to go over all of our picks, give you key takeaways from every single game in one of the greatest weekends of NFL football of any of our lives, courtesy of pickwatch.com, here on 3 and Out, your national NFL podcast. All right, we're back on 3 and Out, your national NFL podcast. Guys, it was an absolutely unbelievable week of football, and most of my picks worked out pretty well. I think we had a pretty good read on these games, as surprising as they ended up being, thanks to pickwatch.com. Over the last decade, more than 10 million people have used PickWatch to help source picks from the very best experts and users, both the NFL media and the fan base at large. Now with PickWatch Pro, you can get advanced analytics and insights to take your game to the next level. Use offer code 3OUTPOD for 25% off your first year of membership. That's the word 3OUTPOD for 25% off your first year of PickWatch Pro. Go to pickwatch.com/pro for more details. All right, guys, unbelievable set of games, unbelievable set of results. Let's start. Bengals 19, Titans 16. Tennessee was 3.5-point favorites at home, and the Bengals lean on their absolute stud rookie kicker to pick up the win. Shadi, what do you think?
One of my favorite moments from the weekend is apparently like McPherson just like tossed his towel and was like, well, I guess we're going to the AFC Championship, boys, as he walked out to nail this kick. Like, I love it. I love that rookie energy. I love when kickers have a little personality to them. I love everything about this one. There's the video going around on social media of him not only hitting a water bottle that's on the upright, but unscrewing the cap of the water bottle as he kicks the ball through. Like, what? That's just That's just, it's insanity. Like this, he is all that is man. I love everything about it. This is just such a fun team. Like the Bengals have not been a fun team for most of our lives. They've been interesting. They've been felons. They've not been like this cool. And I love everything about the Bengals right now. I think the Titans lost not because of Ryan Tannehill, but I think the Titans actually lost because they expected Derrick Henry to be Derrick Henry. We all wanted Derrick Henry to be Derrick Henry. Watching this game, like there was just one moment late in the game where it was like fourth and one, he got a carry and he didn't even try. Like you could just tell his knees aren't right. His burst isn't there. Like he was not willing to throw himself in the pile. Probably like from a mentality perspective, yes, he was willing, but I think he got that ball and just worried. And if you're a guy like Derrick Henry and you've got the ball in your hands and you're worried, or you're not quite sure, or you're not quite comfortable, or your legs aren't feeling quite right, that's not the Derrick Henry we've come to know and love. I think let's run it back. Like he's going to have an offseason to get healthy. He's obviously way ahead of schedule in terms of his preparation for coming back from this injury. So I think he's going to be just fine next year. I think this team's going to be just fine next year. They've got another year to build. And long-term, I'm not worried about the Tennessee Titans in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah, I think the Titans will be okay. And it's the Bengals are, they're giving a little bit of that like Team of Destiny vibe. So we'll see. We'll see. But everything about the way that this team is playing, like so loose, so relaxed, so confident, suggests to me that it's kind of got that little line at us kind of feel about it. And sooner or later, I mean, I don't know where the buck stops. Does it stop in Kansas City? It might. But pretty interesting here. You know, you mentioned we had beat on these games. I did not. I was like 1-4 this week. Last week I was 6-0. This week I was 1-4. So probably don't listen to me anymore. I did not get this one right. I thought the Titans would win this. And I made the same mistake the Titans did. I thought Derrick Henry is going to win a football game. And I think, you know, I agree with you, Shadi. I think that the same error as the team made is that they just put all of their eggs into one basket. Defensively, I think they were a little bit sloppy. Also, some of this is just Bengals players, Joe Burrow being amongst them, playing out of their minds. I mean, how many times did he get sacked? Like 9? And he just doesn't care. He just gets back up. I mean, that's kind of what's great about both of these guys. I mean, the sack bowl definitely met expectations, right? Both these guys take a beating and they don't care and they get back up. It's fantastic. I love it. That is one thing I do like about Ryan Tannehill, and certainly one of the many, many things that you can love about Joe Burrow. And that the kicker, it just, I mean, how do you not love this guy? It's so great. It makes me want to root for the Bengals. It's just absolutely fantastic. That level of like reckless confidence as a rookie kicker is just amazing. But I think Tennessee didn't execute. I think defensively they were weak in a way that they don't really have an excuse for being. And yeah, I mean, I am the number one president of the Derrick Henry fan club, but like, he's not a superhuman just like anybody else coming back from injury. And I don't think Tennessee had a contingency plan for that.
Yeah. Shadi, to your point about Evan McPherson, the kicker, John Breach from CBS Sports, who is a huge Bengals fan, you know, multi-generational Bengals fan, went to the game and posted video of himself as they, from the section, from his spot in the stands, and the kick goes up and he starts yelling, "It's good. It's good." When the ball is like crossing the 20, like not even, you know, near going through the uprights yet. And they're kind of asking him on the CBS Sports Pick Six podcast, which a lot of good friends on that show, Will Brinson, Pete Prisco sometimes, folks I know. And they're like, how did you know it was good? He's like, well, I just watched the kicker. It's like kickers know real fast when it comes off their foot, whether it's going in or out. And McPherson would like hit it and just had that nod. And like, McPherson knew it was good. He was celebrating even earlier. So that's why I started celebrating, because I knew it was going through. But this is actually my worrisome thing. I took a victory lap on Twitter because I was like, look, Bengals, I told you guys that they have a clear path. They can beat the Titans. They are absolutely going to beat the Raiders. Like when the Raiders took that win instead of that tie, and the Bengals got the Raiders instead of the Patriots, and then that lines them up to get the Titans instead of the Chiefs, I'm like, I see this is a team that is way too hot. I think they're going to be successful, and they did it. But this is now twice now against the Raiders and the Titans. they got plenty of opportunities. In soccer, they have expected goals. You know how often you should score given the possessions and chances and, you know, shots at an open net that you're going to take. The Bengals' expected points should be way higher than this because they got some turnovers in opponent territory. They got some long drives where they were very effective, but they settled for the kicker. When they needed to score touchdowns, they are going to need to score touchdowns against the Chiefs. All right. And I think I called the 49ers the Bengals of the NFC last week on the big show. And here we go. The 49ers are the underdog team that cannot stop winning. 49ers 13, Packers 10. We talked about it a little bit already, Samantha, but go ahead and give me your key takeaways from this game.
All right. Well, here we have the only game I got right this week. So let's just with this one. I think that matchup-wise, this was kind of bad for Green Bay going in. They just don't light up well with the 49ers. And we can talk about how, Jimmy has an excellent track record against Aaron Rodgers, or the 49ers always beat the Packers in the postseason. But it's a little bit of a small sample size issue to me, and also different years. So I'm not sure I love the, they have their number argument, but I do think that what did bear
Jim
out
Jim Harbaugh
here,
and Colin Kaepernick really always beat the Packers.
Absolutely.
That definitely was relevant for this game.
So similar to what we're looking at here, right? So, but the one that I do think kind of bears out is that this was a bad matchup for Green Bay. And that's pretty much exactly how it turned out. And I think when you add that to the fact that they didn't execute particularly well, that San Francisco went into the locker room at halftime with a very, very small deficit after what looked like the first drive of that game was just like, oh boy, here we go. Oh, wow. Okay, I was wrong. Green Bay's going to rout them. And then after that, San Francisco just kind of settled in and said, okay, we're not doing that again. Went into the locker room at the half, made some adjustments, came back and did just enough to win. And that's what this San Francisco team does. They're not going to, every week they come in. I mean, we looked at this game and went, I don't know, they barely beat Dallas. And now are we going to look at the game next week against the Rams and say, oh, they barely beat Green Bay, even though they, speaking of one that does have some good recency where the Rams just can't seem to beat the 49ers, but we'll get to that later. But I just think that so much of this is about the way that the 49ers win. It's kind of ugly. It's not an impressive thing statistically. It's not even impressive just to watch, but they just find ways to get it done. So, hey, and these are our heroes, right? I mean, they got rid of Aaron Rodgers and the Packers. We all love Jimmy. I mean, we've been on Jimmy for a while. He was sort of a non-factor in this game, but he did enough to not screw up. And also, Packers special teams, fire it into the sun, man. Brutal. Fire the whole unit into the sun.
And that's a thing. And this is where, when we talked about overtime, I said there are things that are inherent to the game that have to be part of our discussion when we talk about overtime. It's not just offense. There are lots of people who wanted to give Matt LaFleur NFL Coach of the Year, without realizing the fact that he let this go all season long. We've mm-hmm. talked about mm-hmm. the Packers special teams being terrible all season, and no changes were made. No, hey, we're going to, get rid of these three or four players and bring in three or four new guys. We're going to put, more starters on this. No, they didn't do any of that. They just sort of let their special teams suck, and it bit them in the ass when it came playoff time. Yeah, that happens, guys. Sorry, people who love the offensive scheme lords of the world, special team scheme lords are also a thing. And going out and getting, the Dave Phipps or the, John Harbaughs of the world is sometimes kind of important. You need a Dave Tube like the Chiefs have if you want to win playoff games. So, the thing I just wanted to point out in this game is there is something special to be said for the kicker in this one too, because Robbie Gould not only made that super clutch field goal to win this game, he also was continuing his warm-up while the Packers had made their tunnel onto the field, and he's literally just kicking over the heads of a bunch of the Packers.
Oh,
and
I
know deep down in the back of Robbie Gould's head, he's like, just screw these guys. He's a bear at heart. He hates the Packers as much as anyone hates the Packers, and he's just standing out there kicking over the tops of their heads, buzzing the tower. And I think he gets a little extra satisfaction from this one. Obviously, making the kick to win a playoff game is always good, but I think Robbie just got a little extra satisfaction from this one.
Oh, yeah. And I don't know if you guys saw the video afterwards, right afterwards, still, spooky, quiet Lambo. And Robbie Gould, helmet off, has the ball. He went to go get the ball. He's got the ball. He's got it tucked under his arm. He's walking, but he's got, you know, 3 points of pressure, like classic running back ball grip. But he's just sitting there gripping it, like walking. And damn, that feels good. Yeah. And then Jimmy Garoppolo comes up and beats him. He's like, yeah, man, that was awesome. F the Packers. And like, yeah, he didn't say F. He said the whole thing. And it was just like a moment. I'm sitting there going, Robbie Gould, how many times has he kicked and he spent all those years with the Bears? Had, you know, he's lost to this team so many times. He's probably made, I don't know how many snow game kicks in either Soldier Field or Lambeau Field. And for him to come back in this moment and be the guy, he's sitting there going, if anybody is gold from this distance in a snowstorm at night to beat the Packers, it's Robbie Gould. Absolutely. And, you know, like I said, I talked about it before, until Sunday, where we had two games that were even wilder and even better and even more unbelievable. This was so unbelievable. This was such a great game at the end. You know, it wasn't a well-played game. Lots of terrible offensive line play, lots of mistakes. I mean, you know, just a bunch of sloppy stuff. But one of the sloppy things was this blocked punt. You know, I was like giddy because here we go. The Packers are going to have to punt it back to the 49ers. They're down by set. Like, this is going to work out, you know. And then the punt gets blocked. And it goes straight up, like straight up out of the frame. And you have this moment where all 22 players are looking up, looking around, assuming the punt is gone. Like, none of them have any idea where the ball is. And a bunch of them are like looking up into a snowstorm at night, pitch black, flakes falling under the lights. Nobody knows where the ball is. And then it lands like 2 yards off the sideline and 2 yards outside of the end zone. And it just so happens that like the five closest players to the ball are 49ers. There's this, there it is, go get it. They all run. I'm like, this is such a schoolyard, like so like pure, ridiculous, improbable. You know, you add up all the money all of those guys are being paid that were on that field in that moment this year to play football. And they were just reduced to like everybody else, kids on a playground in the middle of the snow. Nobody knows where that ball went. And
didn't it hit one of them in the head too?
Yeah, I think so.
One of the Packers. Exactly. I think it hit someone in the back of the head. Like, really didn't know where it was.
Yes, like absolutely no clue. It lands, they go get it, they run it in. It's just a special moment that reminds you that this game can be just completely unpredictable. And as much as we reduce it to a science, or try to, or as much as we try to reduce it to emotions, you know, the amount of control that these guys have over the outcome of this game is not as much as we want to pretend that it is. And that's why it keeps being fantastic. All right, guys, Rams 30, Buccaneers 27. I called my shot even harder. On 538.com this week, I said the Rams are a matchup nightmare for the Buccaneers. I laid it all out in black and white. I talked about it on this show. I picked the Rams. I was happy to do it. And it looked like I was going to be like right, like wild right, because the Rams got out to a huge lead, a 24-point second half lead. Tom Brady came back, but he didn't come back up all the way. Shadi, what did you think of this?
He did come back up all the way. That's the thing. Like, it was tied. Right. And with like seconds to go, just Matthew Stafford did even more late game heroics. My moment in this game was definitely Matthew Stafford completing that pass and then berating his lineman as he ran down the field. Like, no, no, motherfuckers, you have to run. Like,
run.
They just did not run. Get it. Like, there was just moments where, and I said this about the Rams when we talked about this game, like, you can bring in the best players or you can bring in veterans. And what the Rams did was they brought in the best veterans. Like, you know, Jalen Ramsey's a really good player, but Jalen Ramsey's not necessarily been in these moments before. Matthew Stafford, even though he hasn't been a playoff guy, has been a leader. He's been the comeback kid. He's been the, you know, fourth quarter drives to tie or win games as well as anybody during his career. If he had had a little bit more help with the Lions, he probably could have even done it more. Guys like Von Miller, you could just tell that they rose to the occasion so well in this one. I think the impact that some of those players had from a leadership and a maturity and a big game standpoint meant just as much as their skill. Also, just the injuries have been too much for the Buccaneers. And as much as you talk about this game in terms of what Tom Brady was able to do and what Tom Brady wasn't able to do, like just so many injuries. And I actually changed my pick on this game the second Tristan Wirfs went down. Like when Tristan Wirfs was not able to play in this one, I moved my pick to the Rams because I just thought there's no way. There's no way with so much of a pass rush coming at Tom Brady all day from the front four, you're not going to have to really blitz that much because of Wirfs being gone. That eventually, for most of the game, that looked like that was going to be the story. That just there wasn't enough protection. You couldn't really run the ball. But it came down to when Brady and the Bucs started coming back, it was because they were able to mitigate that. And so I think great job by the Buccaneers, way to come back. But you're talking about teams of destiny. The Rams look like a team of destiny right now.
So it's weird because this was probably like the least exciting game to me of this weekend. And it was like almost like a Falcons Patriots Super Bowl, like in like the second quarter when it was 20-3 Rams. I was talking to my stats director and I was like, yo, this has 28-3 vibes. Like, I think they're going to come back. And then they almost did.
Yeah.
And I mean, the Rams held them off, which is super cool and everything. And I think it was a lot of that is for the reasons that you mentioned. And also, you know, in terms of defensive strategy, I think the Bucs could have done with a little bit more adapting what we normally do specifically with regard to the blitz, considering who you're going up against and what that matchup looks like. So a little bit of a strategic error there as well, but and a lot of execution errors. But I mean, what world do we live in? How lucky are we? And this is where it's like, oh, on those weeks where, you know, we all hate our jobs and we're like, I'm so sick of this. Like, this is obnoxious. Aaron Rodgers is saying too many things. These games are frustrating. I have too much work to do, whatever it is. And then you get a weekend like this and you're like, we're so lucky to be able to do what we do because we had this incredible weekend of football. And like the worst game of the lot, to my way of thinking, was like the best game ever. So, because this was just absolutely amazing. And I don't have great feelings about the Rams going forward. I'll be honest about that. Speaking of matchup nightmare, it's going to go the other direction next time. But super, super cool. It's kind of fun to watch Stafford put out Tom Brady and the Bucs. So very, very cool. They held him off. Another kind of ugly one, but fun one nonetheless.
Yeah, I have so many thoughts. So many thoughts. And Shadi, you called it with Matthew Stafford, Jeremy Reisman, the editor of Pride of Detroit, the SB Nation Lions site, quote tweeted someone who had put together this, you know, comparison of screenshots from Stafford rushing the Rams to go spike it to kill the clock yesterday and him against that miracle comeback against the Cowboys years ago with the Calvin Johnson, the big Calvin Johnson ball. And, you know, yes, we've seen this from Matthew Stafford before, but it's never meant anything like this. Somebody else tweeted like, it's so crazy that Tom Brady erased a 24-point deficit and Matthew Stafford like changed the narrative of how we're going to talk about him as a player forever. And nobody's going to remember it because we played the next greatest game immediately after that. I am fascinated by the Rams 49ers matchup. They've played twice already. The 49ers have beat them twice already. Cam Akers, I said, was going to be a big factor in this game, but I didn't think it was going to be because he lost two fumbles, one right on the doorstep of the end zone right before halftime. That would have been the kill shot. That would have been the, all right, this is it. Like game over. Probably shut the door on that comeback. But even so, you know, the Rams get it done. Stafford gets it done. All of those moves, you know, and Shadi, to your point, Eric Weddle had a potentially very damaging personal foul play. It ended up not erasing the fourth down turnover. But, you know, they went and got the best veterans, but also some of those guys have maybe, like I said, Weddle and Cam Akers, some of the guys they got back but were more of a mixed bag. But still, this is a fantastic showing from Stafford. And I'm just fascinated to see, because if they can get past the 49ers, the fact that the Rams went all in and did everything that they did to get to this point, I think it's a great story. Chiefs, 42. Bills, 36. And guys, we could probably do an entire show just on this game. It was everything. You know, these other three games, I had rooting interests. I had called the Bengals the team to look out for, and I wanted them to win. I thought the Packers were vulnerable, and the 49ers, you know, were a great matchup. They went out and did it. I thought the Rams were a matchup nightmare for the Buccaneers. I got proven right. I got to take victory laps. All I wanted from this was exactly what it gave us, which was a fantastic, fantastic game. Samantha, what was your key takeaways from this one?
So I think I walked away from this one feeling a little bit different, because this was the one where I actually felt like I did have a rooting interest, much more so than the other games. I really, really wanted to see the Bills. I'm not crazy about the Chiefs. I have a lot of issues with them. Love the Bills. Really wanted this for Bills Mafia. Really wanted this for Josh Allen. So many things. Really, really wanted to see a win here. So, but we did get, objectively speaking, perhaps, like, I don't know if I'd say it's the greatest postseason game I've ever seen, but it's certainly the greatest like ending to a postseason game that I've ever seen, because it has something that most great endings don't, which is both teams almost winning it multiple times. Usually when we have these games that end up getting a name, you know, the Music City Miracle or whatever it is, it's because one team came back and did something. And here they both did, and they just did it and did it and did it until they looked quite literally weren't allowed to anymore, because the rules say that you can't in overtime, or who knows how long this would have gone on. So yeah, I mean, we talked a little bit earlier about the overtime issue, and I have to say the big disappointment here to me is that the Bills defense, which, you know, Shadi, I think it was you that mentioned it, this was the best unit in the postseason, and they still think that's true, but they didn't do their job. And Josh Allen playing with like his hair is on fire at the end of the game is only going to do so much when you can't stop Patrick Mahomes. And we can debate to the ends of the earth whether Allen or Mahomes is the better quarterback right now, or who played the better game, or who had more advantages or opportunities or whatever. But in the end, this is essentially a failing of a single unit that should have been the most important unit in the entire game. So I hate it, but overtime rules be damned. The right team won this one under the circumstances.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. In fact, I was going to spend this entire part of my segment talking about the Bills defense anyway, because this is a unit that had literally put the blueprint together on how to stop Patrick Mahomes earlier this season. When you go back to look at, you know, some of the Chiefs' shaky start to the season, it was actually when they played the Bills in September and the Bills were able to just go two high safeties against them. It really showed like the next five teams how to do it. And none of those teams have Micah Hyde and Jordan Poyer at safety, but even those other teams were able to slow down Patrick Mahomes just with a very simple, you know, defensive switch. Rather than playing one high and making everything kind of go in front of you, you play two high and let him complete the shorter passes. And typically that hasn't worked. And really it came down to, why couldn't this Bills team tackle people last night? Like that's the story of the game to me. It wasn't the, you know, huge offensive burst at the end. It's from the very first snap, it was like this Bills team forgot how to tackle all of a sudden. They were doing the right thing.
Yes.
Keeping the ball in front of them. But then guys like Tariq Hill, who are absolutely human joysticks and get loose anyway. In the past, the Bills haven't had trouble with those guys, and all of a sudden they did. The fact that, you know, Tyrann Mathieu didn't play in this game and you still weren't able to win. The fact that Jaron Reed ended up coming out partway through this game, still weren't able to win. I think the Chiefs did not play their best game. I think the Chiefs weren't at full strength. I think the Bills had every opportunity to win this game walking away.
Yep.
And the Chiefs are just that much further ahead of the game. And I think some of that does speak to coaching. I think Andy Reid has been here so many times. He's got pretty middling postseason records. But at the end, far more experienced than that Bills coaching staff. Second kind of, you know, Brian Daboll has had two very good offensive showings. But I still... Man, if you are diving into talk to either Leslie Frazier or Brian Daboll or anyone from this Bills front office or coaching staff during this hiring process, I would definitely ask what happened here. Ask what happened in the lead up to this game, because the Chiefs should not have won this game. The Bills absolutely were the more talented team, were in the more position to win. And we can make this about Mahomes all we want, but I think there is more to be said for the Bills failing this one than Chiefs and Mahomes winning it.
Yeah, Josh Allen played unbelievably well, just lights out, and so much went right for the Bills. This was a great, great opportunity. And I, you know, when they started the long march, when they're like, okay, cool, we got the ball back with like just under 10 minutes left, we're going to try and run a 10-minute offense. I'm like, that's unbelievably unlikely that you drive, use up that much clock, score, and then, you know, kick it off without enough time for Patrick Mahomes to do anything. I mean, it's infinitesimally likely that you pull it off. And they almost did. They went down and scored, converted, you know, the fourth down, the fourth and forever. It was a fourth and 14 that they scored that touchdown on, you know, after converting a third and long, converting a fourth earlier in the drive, you know, just unbelievable play after unbelievable play. Allen bailing them out time and again. And, you know, you give the ball to Patrick Mahomes, and then he gives the ball to Tyreek Hill, and they go and score the touchdown, and you're like, it's over. And then they go back down and score that touchdown. And it's like, okay, now it's really over. You did it, Bills. Like, you did it. And I don't know what kind of a breakdown you need. I don't care how gassed guys are. You know, they went and sat a couple safeties out on like the 50-yard line. I'm like, okay, great. You know, we will give up the pass underneath to Kelce. We'll let him get to midfield. And you know, let's do the one thing we can't do, you know, which is let them get close. And I don't understand the decision making. I don't understand the breakdown there. I don't understand why they kicked it out of bounds. You know, why didn't they square? Why didn't they make the Chiefs return it? Why didn't they make the Chiefs burn some of those 13 seconds off so you get down to 7-6-5 for Mahomes? You don't have enough time for two plays, and it's terrible that it got to that, but that you know, if you're a coach, you're not expecting to hand the ball over with 13 seconds and have to think about how do I keep them from beating me. You know, you should be able to go, okay, 13 seconds left, whatever, kick it out of the end zone, they're not going to get close. But to come all that way and have all those great plays made and to play like that in this spot and then go, yeah, whatever, like if we let it go to overtime, it's no big deal. That's the problem for me. And I think that's the mindset, is to tie it back up to my key takeaway at the beginning, is that we have to stop thinking about overtime as, yeah, we have a chance to win, we'll probably win. You know, it's the same mistake when you make and you're sitting there at the end of the first half and go, we got a minute or two left. Nah, let's just kneel it and go to halftime. Like, you don't know how many possessions you're going to get. You don't know how many chances you're going to have. You need to play to win the game in regulation. You cannot take your chances with overtime because they really are chances. And that's how it is, because that's how it's got to be. And the Bills had every opportunity to win this game. They had it won, and they lost it. And that is sometimes the difference between these players and these coaches that have success over and over. Samantha, I'm right there with you on the Bills. I wanted this so badly for Bills Mafia. I wanted this so badly for Josh Allen. The Chiefs have had plenty of opportunities, and they'll get plenty of opportunities. Hopefully the Bills will have plenty of opportunities too. But this was their best chance to walk through the Chiefs into the Super Bowl, and they didn't take it, and that's on them. Guys, you have been unbelievable all over us. We are seeing the download numbers. We are seeing the sharing. We are seeing the conversations online. Please keep it up. Please spread the word. Your 5-star ratings were still all 5 stars on Apple Podcasts. We're still getting 5-star. I think Spotify just debuted 5-star. Go give us 5 stars if you're listening on Spotify, however you're listening. The traffic to the website is great. Please keep it up. 3outpod.com. Follow us on Twitter at 3outpod. Follow us on Instagram at 3outpod. We're putting up clips from the show. We're chopping it up with you guys. Make sure you download the Halftime app. We have a Monday night show live tonight at 9 ET, just like we always do. 3 shows a week. It's been so fun to do. It's so great to talk football with these two awesome people. And it's so great to talk with you guys, chopping it up online. Download the Halftime app at thehalftime.app or on your app store. Follow me, Ty Shalter, Samantha Bunton at Samantha Bunton, and Shadi at Shadi on there. We're doing texting and topics during the weeks, all that other stuff. And make sure you subscribe wherever you listen to your podcast, so you will catch us, our halftime show, when it goes up in the feed, and you'll catch our big show, our midweek big show, which we always have, and we preview the conference championship games. It's going to be unbelievable, just like it always is, right here on 3 and Out, your national NFL podcast.